All right, welcome everybody into the hours. We are Savvy Basketball. I'm Tyler. You guys know Mark, but I'm really, really honored to have Joe Crispin, who I've gotten to know from afar over text and a couple of meetings. And man, Joe, I just respect your approach to the game and your willingness to help and to speak truth and to not be tied to what's always been done. I think you're a trendsetter, and I was hearing more about you, how you were even a trendsetter as a player yourself. So thank you for giving your time to jump on the hours with us here today.
Pleasure. I love what you guys are doing. I listen on pretty much every single time and keep going, man. I love the creative and contrary thinking is, I guess, my go-to. I can't help it.
Bring it all. Okay. You know, there's no filter here. Okay. Anything. And this all just like comes from like, we want to help coaches. And a lot of times, like being disagreed with in an encouraging way is the most helpful thing that you can do. If someone just always like tells you, yes, how are you going to grow? How are you going to improve? And I think that's one thing you do really well. Like even when you send me texts, like there's always something in there like, hey, consider this. That's a different take or a different way to approach it. So I really appreciate that about you. And it's one of the reasons I respect you. So appreciate you jumping on. Maybe for all of our coaches that are listening that might not know as much about your journey, would you just give them a brief overview?
Yeah. So, like any coach, my playing experience and personal experience, really has radically shaped the way I approach the game. I grew up in a basketball environment. Grandfather was a coach. Dad was a coach. Uncle was a coach. Grew up in the gym. I have a younger brother who's an ESPN guy. He's the commentator who just talks about the stuff, now, but him and I grew up playing together. I grew up playing basketball all the time, backyard, playground, other playgrounds, parks. Loved the game, played sports, did all this other stuff. Had a really different high school career, right? As I was saying to you guys, I scored over 2,600 points in high school. My brother scored almost 2,400. We had three other 1,000-point scorers within a five-year span. We scored like crazy people. We shot threes. We were super aggressive. I had a very formative high school coach that really helped me form an identity that was not normal at all and not even encouraged. Everyone liked it, usually except the coach who had to coach me because it was off the rails sometimes. But then I was fortunate enough to come here to Penn State and have the freedom to do that eventually and shoot a lot of threes and play my game. Coach Dunn, I sometimes say he was gracious enough to give me that opportunity, and coach might say, I don't know if I gave it to you or you took it. That might be debatable. And then was fortunate enough to play everywhere from a basketball perspective. My playing experience really has fashioned me. I always tell people it was the career I never wanted and was super thankful I got, because it was an amazing basketball education. You know, the pros is often seen as this, you know, incredible idyllic environment. And I'm like, now it was chaos and it was survival and it was providing for your family and just figuring out ways to help teams win and keep your identity. But I played in the NBA. I played in the minor leagues. I played in Greece, Poland, Italy, Spain, Turkey, Ukraine, name a country. I probably played a game there. 28 different coaches or so in an 11-year span, summer leagues, minor leagues, touring teams, you name it. If there's a way to play basketball, I played it. That's a simple, you know, 1 week we were scoring 150 points. I was just telling the story to our GAs. I had 24 points and 27 assists in a CBA game. And a week later I was in Greece and the coach was like, hey, I want to call a play. And I'm like, okay, you got to explain that to me. I just scored 150 last week, you know? So, I retired because I wanted to coach. I could have kept playing. Sometimes I'm like, what was I thinking? Right. But, I knew I wanted to coach. I was more motivated to coach. So I kind of stopped saying yes to jobs, went into this kind of semi-retirement fan. I by about 5-6 years in my career, I knew I wanted to coach. So I was preparing for it. And then I took a D3 job being an assistant for the men's and women's teams, started a youth basketball business by accident. Cause I couldn't believe people wanted to pay me to do youth basketball stuff. That's another story. And was at Rowan for 9 years, seven as a head coach. And then came here to Penn State 2 years ago as an assistant coach, because it's my alma mater and Coach Rhodes. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind. And as you guys can already tell, I got lots of stories and lots of thoughts about everything.
Yeah, coach, that's amazing that, you know, just you played at many different levels. You've coached at many different levels. I have so much respect for coaches that like high school or Division III that have to wear a lot of hats. And I'm sure you learned a ton coaching at the Division III level. You mentioned like having to fight for your identity as a player and like fight for your style of play as a player. And I've also heard you say you didn't like coaches telling you what to do, which doesn't come as a shock. So I'm curious, like, how has that shaped your coaching philosophy? Just the way you coach your players, way you relate to them, what you're, you run the offense at Penn State, and y'all had a really, really good year last year offensively. Like, how has that really like shaped the lens that you coach through?
Yeah, the simplest way I put it is that I was in so many different locker rooms and I heard so many player complaints that in many respects, it was just like, I'm just not going to do what players don't want you to do. I'm going to find a way to go with the grain and coach the way players want to be coached. I think like, especially as pros, right? It's one thing I understand when coaches are dealing with high school kids or D3 college kids or whatever, even though I think we often underestimate them, like we were pros, right? I got like three kids and you want to shape me and put me in a box. Like, dude, just hire somebody else if you don't like me, man. Like, I know exactly who I am. You hired me, you paying me good money to make you win. And what are you doing? Like, just let me rock and you'll be happy, right? I'll make you happy. And if not, then fire me and I'll go somewhere else, right? So I experience that so often, right? When I understand a lot of it's based on fear and any number of things, but essentially just like I wrote a book, Offense Wins, that I did years ago. That was really my way of learning, right? I did that 10 years ago. I wrote it before I coached. And it was really just following the complaints. It was following the things that players didn't like. And I was just going to, my wife has heard them all. And I would always tell her, listen, I'm not just trying to complain, but I'm trying to learn, right? I'm trying to learn and vocalize these things so I don't do them. And, you know, what you referenced was like, I was an off the dribble three guy. I, you know, as one NBA executive told me years ago, like you have a world-class skill. And the problem at the time is it was 2001 and it wasn't a valued world-class skill. I could make threes off the dribble and you couldn't hedge at that time and you didn't switch at that time. And it was the NBA was the easiest place for me to get a shot off ever. It was a joke to me. But there was only like two or three coaches who valued my skill set. Then I would go overseas and they'd want to, wow, you're a great scorer. So now I want to put you off the ball. And I'm like, well, that's not exactly how it works, right? Like I score in transition. I score outside the offense. I make plays. Sorry, but this is how I do it, right? And, you know, I had to fight for it. So my resolution is I'm not going to make players fight for who they are. Right. I'm not going to make players fight for what they're good at or great at or what they could be great at. I'm going to take them as they are and try to maximize them for who they are. I'm not trying to change them. I'm just trying to make you the best you can be. And I will adjust to you, right, collectively as well.
It's so interesting, even just the specific of off the dribble three and NBA defense at the time that you played wasn't geared to take that shot away. It was actually geared to give that shot because no one was shooting it, right?
Yeah.
And now everything's changed. Yes. I think as coaches, one thing we could take away from that is, okay, and so what's next? You know, yes. So what is available and how can we take advantage of that? Because everything is going to be cyclical. And I'm sure you have some thoughts on that.
Well, I'd always say to my especially my assistants at Rowan, we'd start the year off and I would say, just remember, there's something that's doctrine now that at least in 20 years or so is going to be the stupidest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. So we want to figure out what that is. Right. And, you know, believe it or not, like I love offense, but like I love defense way more than people would think, because I think if you play defense, when you marry the two and you can play defense in a way that helps your offense, like you guys talk about all the time, you're really creating a synergy and a chemistry and a flow and a rhythm. So finding creative ways to do that is something that I just love doing. And as you mentioned, Mark, like doing at the D3 level, my players would often ask me like, well, who's doing this? And I'd say, I don't know.
Nobody.
Yeah, that's the point. That's our competitive advantage is no one's doing this. And where did you get this? I'm like, I don't know. It works. It'll work. Just trust me. You guys are the guinea pigs, but it'll work, right? And a lot of times it did. And sometimes it didn't. And you say, all right, well, maybe we didn't do it well enough. And, you know, Lock Left is, I was looking at my notes and it was like 2018, I started tinkering with these things. And it took a couple years and COVID kind of made that into something even more. And then all of a sudden I'm like, all right, we're going all in on this based on some of the things we talked about. And it's like, those are great places to learn. But it's like these things, when you get stuck in a rut and it's like, this is the way to do it. To me, it's often the best thing, to follow is the unalterable doctrines. Mm-hmm. So whatever is completely accepted of this is the way, I'm probably going to just try to do the opposite because I think I could gain a competitive advantage there, right? Within reason, right? The post play, that's like, okay, now the post is open one-on-one. Well, unless you have Shaq, if Shaq was out there, right? Yeah, he scored at a 65, 66% rate. There was no matchup. I think what happens, though, is are you open to doing that is a different question, right? And that goes, we mentioned this, in terms of listening to your players. You might have the option in your locker room, but can you see it, right? Do you have eyes to see that option? That's often the issue, is we're so stuck in the rut of like, this is the way it has to be done, that you don't see, in my case, a 42% three-point shooter off the dribble, wide open, and you don't want to use it, right? To me, it's often like, what is common practice? And do I have the answer that's not that? Right. Sometimes it's that simple. If it's asking you that question. And the other element that I mentioned to you guys before that I ask myself all the time is like, don't ask yourself, what do I see? What don't I see? Right. When you're watching games, when you're watching film, what don't I see? What don't I see? What don't I see? That's like a total different lens to watch film in, because if you recognize what you don't see, that's where the competitive advantage lies philosophically for me.
Hey everybody, this is Tyler, and I'd like to personally invite you to join our free Savvy Coaching community. Post any question you have here in our chat and get your questions answered, as well as get access to all of our free resources in our Savvy community. We've got it all here for you. So click the link below and we'll see you inside. Yeah. I mean, so we're giving you three to five, there's always gonna be more. We're giving you tools this offseason in order to improve. And just to summarize, you know, Joe just said, like, tool number one, listen to your players. And I just wanna go one step deeper on that. And then Mark, you can chime in on this if you want to. Most of us just need to actually like change our lens in order to listen to our players. We tend to go, especially in the offseason, and our lens is completely from what do we want our team to look like? How do we want our team to play? Well, switching your lens, listening to your players, you'd be like, okay, let me actually dynamite the whole thing. Start at zero and listen to my players by looking at them and identifying what superpowers exist here in this locker room. This is what we got. Right? As opposed to starting with, oh, here's the structure that I want to play under. No, what superpowers do we have? What's unique to this group of players? And then how can I build something that puts players in their greatest strengths most often? You know, Joe, if you'd had a coach that had done that, you know, across the board, right, things would have probably been a lot different. You wouldn't have had to fight so hard for it.
Correct.
Right. And so I think that would be like just tool number one this offseason, as opposed to I'm shopping for systems. Instead, just sit down, list out all your players' names, and write, have a column that says superpower. And it honestly, I think, will make you appreciate what you do have more. Because we all get frustrated with what players can't do. They can't guard. They're not tough. They're not in the weight room. They can't shoot, right? They can't dribble with their left hand, whatever, you know? But like, what if we came from a perspective of here's what they can do? And then it creates a sense of camaraderie, belief, and connection a lot more as well. So I think that I just wanted to like, give that practical application to what listening to your players actually means, being a player's coach actually means. Because I don't think I've ever talked to a coach. I've rarely talked to a coach that says, nope, I don't want to be a player's coach. But yeah. It's rare that you actually have a player's coach. So it's not like a lack of desire. It's a lack of understanding of what a player's coach actually is.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what you're saying and what Coach said earlier is like all coming together for me. Just, you know, highlighting what your players can't do is a lot of what happens in recruiting conversations is like, well, they can't do this or they don't fit this. Like, well, what, they're pretty good. Like they do a lot of really good things. How can we highlight those things? So a tool to give a coach this off season I would actually remove any roles, any positions that you have on your players and develop every player, every skill. Like I just, if I'm building a team, whether high school level, college level, pro, like just give me a bunch of tall athletic basketball players and we'll figure it out, because offense is an application of skill. It's what coach is talking about, is you got a 42% 3-point shooter off the dribble. Well, that's the offense. Like we don't need to run all this other stuff. Just get me into a ball screen, make them go under and I'll shoot off the dribble. So I would challenge every coach, again, like whatever your player's superpower is, think of your offense more as application of skill instead of what are we going to run this year? Because if you develop better players, if you took better shots, you wouldn't be searching for your next offensive system or your next set play that you saw on social media that worked that time and it was cut for the highlight tape. Like you wouldn't need any of that stuff. Whatever you had, whatever you're most comfortable teaching is probably the best offense to put your players in the best position to succeed.
Yeah. And the other thing I would add is, do you let your players surprise you? This is just something that at the Division III ranks, you don't have a ton of practice. So I had to use practice to learn about them. We had some pickup that you could barely watch, right? I could monitor the gym and walk through, right? But it's like, do you let your player surprise you? Like, do you create structures that enable you to enable them to actually show you what their best one-on-one move is, what their best situational awareness is? And sometimes it's literally listening. And the last team I coached at Rowan gave them actually two options. I had our four or five seniors and I said, listen, I had an amazing one-on-one player. And then I had other really good one-on-one players. We were a really good team. I literally sat them down and I said, you have two options. I can create scripts for you that revolve around these central things like you would a traditional NBA offense, or we can free flow it, create double, triple gaps and attack Waldo's and borderline run almost nothing and be the best one-on-one downhill dangerous team in the country. They chose option two. And I said, all right, let's roll with it. And that's like in a week into the season. Right. So, cause it's like, I couldn't watch them. It wasn't like I knew exactly what I had. So sometimes it's literally listening, and these guys were older, more mature. They knew who they were players. Like they're not just children who don't know their identities, but I often felt like as a coach, you know, there were multiple times as a player where they would say, well, we don't do that here. And I would say, you do now. Like I had a 1-foot fadeaway out of bounds that looked like it was the most stupidest shot in the world, but I made it all the time and I'll make it. And then you'll say, oh, I feel good about it now. Like, all right, you know, but you don't make them prove it. Let them show you in a safe environment, if you will.
Even just that exercise of giving the two options and then rolling with what they say is such an amazing tool for coaches to apply across the board, right? It's a way that you can, within your standards and within your identity, which is you believe that you have great one-on-one players and you want to have that freedom in space. Okay. So now there's two ways we can get there, A or B. You're still going the same direction, right? As a leader, you're still going the direction you believe in, but by empowering them to make a decision, they're going to fight like crazy to make it work because it was their idea, as opposed to always having in the back of their mind, like, well, this wasn't my idea. This sucks. I'm going to, right? So, I mean, across the board from like a team retreat to a practice length to weights or plyos, whatever, like give more A and B options. And I think you'll find that your players trust you more, coaches. So that's excellent.
Let me go two quick follow-ups for coach on this one, because I think a lot of coaches will benefit from this one that are listening. One, just for alignment clarity issue, you mentioned go after Waldo's. That would be the weakest defender.
Yes, for us, okay. That's the weakest defender.
All right. Quick follow-up. Let's say we identify the Waldo. Are you having to tell that to your players? Are you calling something the joystick? Like, hey, number 15 is the Waldo. That's the matchup for us. Or does it just kind of happen in the wash as we run our stuff?
Yeah, it's more in the wash. We would say, don't let him hide. Don't let Waldo hide. Like under any condition, just get him involved in action. And there are exceptions, right? The higher the level, the more applicable it is, because you really can, within reason, process some more information. We can help with some more calls because we have 90,000 TV timeouts, and which is a whole nother conversation, and amazing for flow, right? We don't like our product. Well, let's have 35 TV timeouts and then we wonder why we don't have flow, but it will drive me crazy. But sometimes now at this level, right, some guys are worse off the ball. So they're terrible being the tag man. They're terrible. So we can get specific depending on your personnel, but in general, it's a, we're not going to let him hide. And like literally the way I would work on that when I first started really introducing it was more conceptual. We'd put a red jersey on guys and we'd play 5-on-5 shuttle, three teams, you know, up and down, and don't let the guy, if the guy with the red jersey's on you, like just go get him involved in the ball. And it was fun because I'm telling you, you're Waldo, right? And like, I love my players. Like my guys, they knew I told them the truth. And I'm like, well, you're a Waldo. So you're Waldo today. And then they're like, you think I'm a Waldo? Yes, I think you're a Waldo. I've told you that before. So prove me wrong. Go ahead, go for it. You know, you might get in high school. I don't know. You could get a complaint for that in high school probably.
But. Well, and but there's different, like you even said it, like some guys, like they don't tag the role well, or they're, yeah. you know, they're 5'11". So let's make them the low man. And they're yeah. the Waldo in help. They might be a great on ball defender. That might be why they're a Division I player.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that they're a great rim protector. So I think there's different versions of being a Waldo. One constraint or like just one idea you could play with is like, hey, whoever the red jersey's guarding, that player has to shoot. So yes. just like we were going to like find that advantage. Okay. One more, Tyler. Sorry.
Waldo is now a term that I'm using. I think like that's one huge nugget right here. Like I love that term. We love sticky language. So that's good.
Do people know like where's Waldo anymore?
You
got to teach them.
You got to have kids, probably.
So you just heard about the sticky language of finding the Waldo. This concludes part one of our two-part interview with Joe Crispin, assistant coach for Penn State, pro basketball player, revolutionary of the game. The stuff was so good and so dense, and we went a little bit longer that we decided to break it into two parts. Part two is going to be coming for you guys next week. Let's do a quick recap, Mark, of big takeaways from part one with Coach Joe Crispin.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious Coach had so much knowledge and he could draw from his playing experience, his coaching experience as a Division III head coach, and then now as an assistant at the D1 level. So I loved the way the conversation just kind of went from his playing days to his head coaching days to how he's an assistant coach over the offense at Penn State now. And I think throughout the entire part one and even into part two, when our listeners get to that, they'll see that kind of an interwoven theme was a challenge that every coach has is how do we balance like what's best for the team and then what's best for our players? It's obvious hearing Coach talk that as a player, he really had to fight for his style of play because he was well ahead of his time. Talk about shooting three, you know, deep threes, playing off the dribble, scoring outside of the offense. But at the same time, as the coach, you've got to balance like, are those things outweighing what we would get out of maybe running our traditional offense or running our system? And I think it'd take a special player like Joe to where the pendulum kind of swings in his favor. And the challenge for coach is like, how do we allow Joe or coach to do that and not everybody else do that? So that's always a challenge. I thought he had some really, really good insights there.
Yeah. I think we all want to be a player's coach. And listening to Joe talk helps us understand how to be more of a player's coach. You have to listen to your players. You have to be willing to embrace the strengths, the unique strengths of your players. And even just in that last, you know, very specific language, sticky language piece of find the Waldo, he's able to systematize what everyone does naturally when playing the game. You go play pickup, you find the weakest defender and attack him. Well, he just said, okay, we're going to call that Waldo. Like, find the Waldo, where's Waldo? And this is how we're going to do it, and here's how we're going to practice it. And you just throw a jersey on him, and you got to find him. And so that's really what it means to be a player's coach, is take something that you believe in as a principle of play, and then empower your players to go and hunt it out and find it by giving it some level of structure, or at least naming it. So that concludes part one. Thank you for joining us on The Hours. As always, stay tuned for next week with part two with Coach Joe Crispin as we dive in to even more of what it means to be a savvy coach, questions that you should ask yourself, and what it means to be an artist, both as a player and a coach. Until next time, I'm Tyler. That's Mark for Savvy Coaching. Stay savvy.
We'll be right back. Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.